that man behind the curtain.
All that hate's gonna burn you up, kid.
Keeps me warm.
You'll put down your rock and I'll put down my sword and we'll try and kill each other like civilized people.
Hello and welcome to the Red 7 Weebycast, the official podcast of The Rouge Cinema. This is episode 39 for the week of September 3rd, 2018. I'm your host, Amant Naidu, and you can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at HJNaidu. That's H-J-N-A-I-D-U. This week I'm going to be talking about two movies that I watched. The first one is 2018's Upgrade. It was just recently released on Blu-ray and is starring Logan Marshall Green. And the second movie I'm going to talk about was just hitting theaters this past weekend. And it is called Searching, and it is a feature film debut from Anish Chaganti, starring John Cho. But before we get into that, there was a few other things that I watched this past week that I thought I would mention just briefly. The first one was Ozark Season 2. So this, if you remember, is a Netflix original film starring Jason Bateman and Lauren Lilly. And Season 1 was released, seems like last year, but maybe it was a couple years ago. And yeah, I watched that first season. I think I binged it all in one day. Really loved it. So I was obviously looking quite forward to the release of season two. And yeah, then they announced that season two was going to be released on August 31st of this year, 2018. And so yeah, I marked that in my calendar and was ready to watch it as soon as it was released. So on Friday, I got an email from Netflix saying that season two of Ozark was now available. And yeah, I knew I was going to be watching it that weekend, and I assumed I was going to be binging it because I had pretty high hopes for it. So I didn't watch it Friday night on the release night. I actually waited till Saturday and I started watching it on Saturday. And yeah, I binged it all again, season two, all 10 episodes over that Saturday, kind of throughout the day and then into the evening. Yeah, the funny thing is, I got that email from Netflix saying it was released and they knew that I was interested in watching it. And when I went to actually watch it on my Apple TV, so I think it was like third generation Apple TV, went to watch it, pulled up suggestions for me, and Ozark Season 2 was not in that list. So I went to new releases and nothing was in that list for Ozark, and went to recently added, and yeah, it wasn't there either. So this is something I've complained about in the past about Netflix, of how they kind of hide all their new releases or things that they know you're interested in, and you have a really hard time finding them for some reason. You think that, you know, they know what you're interested in. They just told me the day before that, hey, Ozark Season 2 is out now and we know you're interested in it, so go check it out. But then when you get there, it's not actually easy to find. And I've heard that complaint from a lot of people around, you know, how things get lost inside of the Netflix menus or just don't even show up at all. And that's a complaint with a lot of the, you know, these movies that they buy the distribution rights for, where they go to some of these film festivals and people get really happy that, yeah, Netflix bought it, so it's going to get out in front of a bunch of people. But then they just kind of go out into the ether and you don't even see them showing up anywhere unless you know specifically to go search for it. So for Ozark Season 2, I actually had to go into the search function and search for it to actually bring it up, which was pretty weird. And, you know, that got me to thinking of, you know, why is this a thing where Netflix doesn't show the things you're actually interested in on the main screens? So I was thinking maybe, you know, they know I'm interested because they know that I had binged it last year. They probably have statistics for that I watched it all in one day. They know they sent me this email saying that it is now out. So maybe just them knowing that I have this that I'm highly anticipating it, that they know that I'm going to go search it out. So they don't want to just show it on any of the main screens, kind of waste real estate. They'd rather use that space maybe to showcase things that they want to kind of push on me. So since they know I'm just going to go find Ozark in the search function, maybe they can show me, you know, instead of showing Ozark, they show some other thing that they can show me. So maybe that's what their strategy is. I don't know. Or maybe it's just they have really bad, maybe just some of these UIs and how they decide what to show you is just terrible. I don't know, but I know it confuses a lot of people. So anyway, getting back to Ozark season two, overall, I was pretty happy with season two. It has that same dark theme that season one had, and which I really liked. Season two might be a little bit darker. I don't think it didn't get me kind of on the edge of my seat, maybe as season one did, and I didn't feel that same tension that I had basically throughout all of season one. I mean, that's here, but it just did not have that same effect on me. There was a lot of surprises in season two here. They actually killed off a number of characters, which I had no idea that they would do. I didn't think they'd kill off some of these characters. So that was actually quite surprising. Maybe they're going for a, kind of like a Game of Thrones thing here, just kind of keep the audience guessing of, you know, who's going to be around, and that anyone kind of is fair game to knock off. And for the series itself, I mean, the strongest thing for me that I found to be the most interesting anyway was when they focused on the family, the main family, Jason Bateman and Lauren Lilly's family and their two kids, and their roommate, I guess, Buddy. So I think that was stuff was, I mean, the most interesting to me, and that probably makes sense. I mean, they're the main focus of the show. And then also with Ruth Langmore, if you remember, I kind of forgot about her existence until I started watching season two here, but she was the character, she's the daughter of kind of this, down and out family who are criminals, or kind of small time criminals, just kind of like petty theft and stuff like that. And basically Marty, Jason Bateman's character, in season one, he took her under her wings and, gave her the strip club to manage and that type of stuff. So when they focus on her character, I find her a pretty good character, and I really like, most of the stuff that they do with her. And yeah, when they were focusing either on the family or on the daughter, or not the daughter, but on Ruth, then yeah, that was when I found myself most interested. But some of the stuff with Ruth, they started to focus a lot on her dad. He returns from prison, and there's a lot of stuff with her dad that got pretty old pretty quickly. It seemed like they were just kind of kept going back to the same well over and over with, their relationship and just how he was treating her and how, she was trying to deal with him. So it didn't seem like anything was really progressing there, and it just kept going over and over to the same thing. And I was getting a little bit bored of that. And probably the thing that I was least interested in Ozark, and actually season one and season two, was the FBI agent. I never really cared for his storyline. I didn't like how weird, he was, and just, he was really out there on a lot of the stuff he did. And, they really got into that in season one, and there's more of that here in season two, but I think they might have toned it down a little bit. But either way, I think, whenever we focus on him, there's actually a lot that focuses on him in season two. And whenever they got into that, I just, that was probably the least favorite thing for Ozark season two for me. I just wish that, I think having that law enforcement angle is important in the show. And I think, it's fine to have that. But I just wish that they maybe would have followed a more traditional way of doing this, like, I don't know, the way that it was, that this FBI agent was just kind of this complete weirdo and, just has these weird quirks and whatnot. Wasn't a fan of that. So yeah, I just wish they would have, done that a little bit differently. So anyway, like I said, season two, solid. I liked it quite a bit. Didn't enjoy it as much as season one, but I did feel, season one set the bar pretty high, so they had a lot to live up to. So I mean, I still binged season two, like I said, in one day, so I guess, from that you can assume that I really liked it, because I'm not gonna do that for a show that I don't care for. So yeah, they set up at the end of this one, they set up season three pretty well, and I think it's gonna go in a kind of a new direction, and I'm pretty excited to see how that plays out. And yeah, if you haven't checked it out yet, it's definitely available now on streaming on Netflix. And yeah, if you haven't seen any of the seasons yet, I do recommend this series. It's pretty solid. It's like another good one from Netflix TV. So another show that I watched this week, TV show, is Jack Ryan. So this is a new Amazon Prime original starring John Krasinski. So he's the guy from The Office, which I've never actually watched, The American Office. It's been on my list for a long time, just haven't got around to it. But anyway, John Krasinski is in this. He's the main guy playing Jack Ryan. And yeah, he was just recently in The Quiet Place, where he he directed and starred in The Quiet Place as well, which was a pretty solid movie. And if you've seen, what else was he in? He was in 13 Hours, The Benghazi Story, or whatever that one was that came out a couple of years ago. It was an all right movie, that one. It was, you know, it was fine. It was a decent action movie. But yeah, he recently is, you know, with The Quiet Place, like, I think he went to the next level here. But anyways, Jack Ryan season one just released here on August 31st as well, this past Friday. And I had been looking forward to this one quite a bit. I am a pretty big fan of the Tom Clancy movies that have been released, you know, over the last few decades, I guess. For the most part, you know, I'm a big fan of the two Harrison Ford ones that came out, Patriot Games and Clear Present Danger. Really enjoyed those movies. I think that has a lot to do with Harrison Ford being in it. I am a fan of him. So there has been a few other ones like The Hunt for Red October, decent. It's a solid one. I know a lot of people think that's the best one. And then there was the Sum of All Fears, where they brought in a new Jack Ryan with Ben Affleck, and that one was decent as well. I did not mind that. I found it to be a pretty good addition to the, you know, the Tom Clancy series that they were putting out here. And then there was a new one a few years ago starring Chris Pine. I think it was called Shadow Recruit, and that one was not the best. It was pretty lame. It was kind of cool to see him try and take it in a new direction, but it got to be a little bit too actiony, I think, for me. For what Jack Ryan is, he was barely an analyst in that new movie Shadow Recruit. So yeah, it didn't really click with me, and I don't think it clicked with a lot of people because I think they gave up on it. I think they're planning on making that into a franchise, but yeah, it just obviously didn't work out. So anyway, I've never actually read any of the Tom Clancy books, but yeah, I am a fan of the films, so I was really looking forward to see what Amazon could do with a TV series for this. So the first couple episodes of this, actually, so it released on August 31st, and I just happened, it was Thursday night, and I just decided to see maybe if they put it up there early. I think it was at about 8 o'clock Thursday evening. So I went to Amazon Prime, found it, and fired up the first episode and actually started playing. So yeah, my wife and I, we watched the first couple episodes on the Thursday night before the release, so I don't know what the deal with that is. I don't know if they just... it was up early, or if there was some sort of time zone thing, or it was just happened to be, you know, whatever time they were using as the release date. Maybe that just worked out to be, you know, early for me. So anyway, we watched the first couple episodes that Thursday night, and yeah, I really, really did enjoy them. I really like how they set up the villain in the first couple episodes, and that's probably what I like the most about the show. It just... the way it gave the villain a decent backstory, a thorough backstory where we get an understanding of, you know, why this villain ended up where he was and, you know, why he felt motivated to do these things he's doing. And it wasn't just in the first couple episodes. It was, you know, throughout the 8-episode series here, they did focus quite a bit on the villain's backstory. And I thought that really helped to flesh him out and give a little bit more perspective on that side, rather than just making, you know, this villain a guy who has, you know, a faceless guy who has no real story, and just, you know, he's the villain because he's the villain and he's doing bad things. But, you know, it really felt more fleshed out, and I think that makes, you know, it makes any show better when you have a little bit of understanding of the villain. Those are usually, you know, the shows that end up being, shows and movies that end up being, you know, much more enjoyable when there's a good villain. So I think this one had a decent villain. So yeah, the rest of the seasons, the remaining 6 episodes, they were decent. I don't think it was spectacular, though. It didn't really... it lived up to my expectations, I guess, but it was not... it didn't go, like, to the level I was hoping it would. And yeah, this 8-episode season is pretty much the sweet spot for me. I think, you know, the 8 to 10 episodes is where I want my TV series to be. I've said in the past that, you know, when you get into that 23 episode TV series, like, I'm out. There's no way I'm watching those. But yeah, when you're in the 8 to 10 range, you know, 13's pushing it, but I'll watch a 13 episode series as well. You know, then it gives it a little bit time. You know, it doesn't feel like there's any filler or anything like that. It just feels like they can focus on the story they're telling and just go hard with that, right? And I feel that's what Jack Jack Ryan was like. It just didn't have much filler, if any. It just basically focused on the plot, the story, and the characters, and just kind of drove that forward. So, yeah, overall, it was decent. I recommend checking it out. It is entertaining. I think John Krasinski is pretty good as a Jack Ryan. He plays that Boy Scout role pretty good. And, you know, maybe he's pretty ripped and whatnot. So, like I said, I've never read any of the Jack Ryan novels, like any of the Tom Clancy books around him. So I don't know what his actual physical description is, but I know like Harrison Ford, who's played him in the past, was, you know, he's never been like a really super athletic type guy. He's always just been, kind of has a body of an analyst, what you'd expect him to be. I mean, he is a former Marine, but, you know, that was something to get used to, I guess, here with the new one. And something else that I was actually disappointed here with the TV series is there's no inclusion of John Clark, and I don't think they're going to include the character of John Clark at all. So in the Harrison Ford movies, he was played by William Dafoe, and I thought he was a pretty good character. So he's kind of like a CIA agent who's out in the field, and he does all kind of a lot of the dirty work. And I think in the Ben Affleck movie, Some of All Fears, I think John Clark was played by Liv Schreiber. And so, yeah, because there is a character in this actually that I thought was John Clark. When he introduced himself, I didn't catch what his name was, so I assumed he was John Clark because he was basically that type of character. And then after the first episode, so I went to IMDb to check to see what this guy's name was, and it was not John Clark. It was actually Matthias, I think. So I did a little bit of, not research, I guess. I just kind of Googled a little bit about if John Clark was going to be in the Jack Ryan series, and it turns out he's not because there's some sort of rights issues with that character. And for whatever reason, Amazon does not have the rights to include the character of John Clark in the Jack Ryan series. So apparently I didn't know there were actual, I always thought that John Clark was just a character in the Jack Ryan series of books, but it turns out he actually had his own books as well. So there must be something along those lines where they had the rights to the Jack Ryan novels. And even though John Clark, you know, is in those novels, he has his own novels as well. So maybe there's some sort of rights thing around that. So anyway, that was disappointing to find out he's not going to be in there because he is, like I said, I was a fan of his character in the other movies. So that's too bad. So something that was actually weird about this series was there's this subplot with this drone pilot. It was interesting. Like I really liked what they were exploring with the drone pilots and just, you know, they were kind of focusing on how he is having trouble coming to terms with what he's doing. You know, he's 10,000 miles away and he's killing people with this drone from a trailer in a parking lot somewhere. So, you know, they were kind of focusing on, you know, how this was affecting him as he is doing this type of stuff. And I found it super interesting. But the thing is it does not tie in at all to the story that we're watching here in the Jack Ryan series. Never comes into play with the main plot, which was a little bit weird. And this character, he has an arc of his own, like, and I think it resolves itself in an all right way. It seemed a little bit unrealistic, but it still resolved itself, and he had a decent arc. So it was a little bit weird that this thing was kind of plopped in there. It just felt out of place, and it didn't feel like it belonged. It was just, you know, if there was any filler, I think that was kind of some of the filler. Even though it was interesting, it just did not feel like it fit at all, and it seems like it just should not have been in there. It should have been cut. So I don't know, maybe in future seasons they have plans to have this guy kind of, you know, cross paths with Jack Ryan and, you know, get into the plot, but maybe they're just setting up this character. But it seemed weird how there was no connection at all in season one. So anyway, yeah, like I said, I would recommend checking it out. It is a decent series, and you know, it's 8 episodes, and I think they're all around an hour each, so it's pretty quick to get through. So that one is, it's streaming on Amazon Prime, if you got that. Another thing, so I binged both of those on the weekend. It was a long weekend here. It was Labor Day, so, you know, I had an extra day. But I think on Sunday, no, actually Monday afternoon, I think, I came across this other one on Netflix, this TV series called The Innocents. So season one was on there. So it's a Netflix original TV series. I think it's a British series, and it's set in England and Norway. So I knew nothing about this series. Saw the odd story about it showing up here and there in my feeds all over the place, but, you know, on Facebook or Twitter. So, you know, that's one reason that caught my attention. So this thing is like it's a teen love story, but there's a sci-fi twist on it. And I'm not going to go away with the, you know, what the story is actually about, because I would consider it a spoiler, because the first episode actually plays with the understanding that you don't know what's going on. So yeah, I'm not going to mention what it's, you know, what the sci-fi twist on it is, in case you do plan to watch it. So yeah, I was watching the first episode and I was super confused throughout it. Like, I had no idea what was going on. And then when the episode ends, it ends in a way where it kind of explains most of what's happening, and you get a fairly clear picture of what the series is going to be about, and what, you know, what you just watched. It starts to make a little bit more sense and you're not as confused. So first episode was all right. Decided to go into the second episode and I had a really tough time getting through it. Then I think I started the third episode, but I gave up. I just was not getting into it. It just was not doing it for me. So I'd say this, you know, it moves slow, but that's usually not an issue for me. Like, I don't mind a slow burn of a movie or a TV series. But for whatever reason, I just could not get into this one. So yeah, I just decided I'm not gonna continue with it, and I just gave up on it. But I mean, it looks really good. I think it has a pretty good production value, and from what I understand, I think it has some pretty decent reviews. Like, I think it's critically acclaimed. But yeah, for whatever reason, it just didn't do it for me, and yeah, I don't think I'm gonna revisit it. But yeah, feel free to check it out. Maybe I should continue with it if it has good reviews. But yeah, I'm probably not. Just too much other good stuff there to check out. Okay, and one last thing I watched. It's actually a movie from 1983 called Blue Thunder. I have no idea why I watched this. I was just laying on the couch and going through Netflix. I was actually looking for something to maybe have a nap to, because it was Monday, and my wife and I stayed up to like 1:30 a.m. finishing Jack Ryan. And then I got up pretty early with the kids because they were being loud. I was planning on sleeping in, but I couldn't. So my plan was that afternoon, I was laying on the couch in the basement in our family room, and I was just looking for a movie to throw on that I could, you know, have a nap to, because I do that quite often. It's weird, but I do it. So anyway, Blue Thunder came up, and I was like, oh, I remember Blue Thunder. I couldn't remember if I had ever actually seen it. I don't think I've ever actually seen it, but I do remember when it was out and hitting theaters, and I thought it looked pretty cool. And then I remember seeing it all the time in the video store, but just never actually renting it, I don't think. So anyway, this came on here, and I threw it on. 1983 film about this advanced helicopter that is used for basically crowd control that they're going to test out in real life situations. So it's starring Roy Scheider from Jaws, Warren Oates, and a very young Daniel Stern, which was pretty funny. But anyway, so yeah, I'm not going to talk much about it. It was all right. It was actually better than I was expecting, and it seemed like it might have had a pretty big budget. Like, I think it might have been a big deal, because it looked pretty good actually for being from 1983. You know, nothing really stood out as bad effects or anything. I think most of the stuff was practical. Like actual helicopters and stuff, I don't think they used models or anything, not that I could tell. It was a lot of the stuff is kind of cringeworthy. There's a lot of stuff they're doing. Like, they're in the helicopter, Daniel Stern and Roy Scheider's characters, and they go to this house in the OC where this woman is doing yoga naked. And so these guys are cops, and they're like peeping on her doing this. They're basically hovering the helicopter in this neighborhood watching this lady do yoga naked. So there's a few stuff like that where it's a little bit cringeworthy. You know, it doesn't really land very well today for sure. So, I mean, other than that, like I said, it was decent production value. All right story, but the stakes seem pretty low, maybe just by today's standard. Like, the plot kind of makes out this big thing, this kind of conspiracy. And when you hear what's actually happening, it was like, what? That's it? And it was kind of a little bit underwhelming for where it goes. But the final scene was kind of this helicopter battle between two helicopters in downtown. Not sure where they are. I think they're in LA. Yeah, they were in the OC. So yeah, LA. And so it's a decent scene, actually. There's two helicopters kind of playing cat and mouse, trying to take each other out, and some F-16s get involved. But it's kind of weird. Like, they're basically just this collateral damage all over the place. So the good guys, like, these F-16s launch a missile at him, heat seeker, and he basically takes the helicopter to this restaurant, this barbecue restaurant, and kind of hovers in front of the smokestack of this barbecue restaurant, and then takes off at the last second, and the missile destroys this restaurant. So they show this quick shot of everyone running out of the restaurant before the missile hits. But it's like, what kind of cop kind of like sacrifices a restaurant in the middle of the day, you know, that could be filled with people? So there's that. And he redirects another missile into a, like right into a high rise in the middle of the day. So just weird stuff like that. It was just like this collateral damage that he did not care about as a cop, which was kind of odd to see. But anyway, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it or anything. There was nothing really. I don't consider this wasn't a movie I watched as a kid, so I don't really have any, you know, that nostalgic feeling towards it. It didn't really, you know, didn't really do it for me. I'll probably forget about it pretty quickly. So that was Blue Thunder. It is streaming on Netflix if you are interested. Well, in Canada, it's streaming on Netflix anyway. All right, so I talked way longer than I wanted to there for those things that I was only planning on just kind of mentioning, but it looks like I talked a little bit longer than I wanted to. But anyway, let's get into 2018's Upgrade. Here's a clip from the trailer.
As a quadriplegic, must be frustrating for you, someone who likes to get things done with their hands.
Here's the thing.
Four guys murdered my wife.
If I could find these men, I'd do it.
What if I told you I could offer you something that would enable you to walk again? I call it STEM, a computer chip that has the potential to change everything. It's a new, better brain.
I am STEM, the system operating your body for you.
Can anybody else hear you?
No, only you. May I point something out? In the drone surveillance footage, Sir Brantner, Marine Corps, address 414 Citrus, New Ground. You'll need a plan.
I got this.
This doesn't seem like a well thought out plan.
Help! I need your permission to operate independently.
Permission granted!
Thank you.
Stay down, man.
Spam, he's got a knife!
I see that. We have a knife, too. You now have full control again, Gray.
So Upgrade is written and directed by Lee Whannell, starring Logan Marshall Green, Melanie Vallejo, and Steve Danielson. The description is, set in the near future, technology controls nearly all aspects of life. But when Gray, a self-identified technophobe, has his world turned upside down, his only hope for revenge is an experimental computer chip implant called STEM. So I rented this one on iTunes and watched it in my theater. So the director here, Lee Whannell, he hasn't really directed much, but he has written quite a bit. So he wrote the first few Saw films. So I found that to be interesting. So this one is a Blumhouse production. So I think I mentioned it before, but yeah, if you're not familiar with a Blumhouse movie, so basically their model is to create low-budget horror films, mostly horror films. So their low budget is usually around $5 million. And what they do is they give the director this budget of, you know, up to $5 million and say, go make whatever movie you want. And, you know, they put a bunch of these movies out. They can just kind of churn them out pretty quick and for, you know, a low cost. And they're just banking on, you know, a handful of these kind of blowing up and making a ton of money. So, you know, even if they had a bunch of failures, they get these few that are huge and then they make, you know, that's where they make their money. So this strategy has been working pretty well for them so far. So Get Out was a Blumhouse production, and The Village from M. Night Shyamalan, that was also a Blumhouse production. So they do put out some pretty decent stuff. And, you know, I think the Purge movies are also Blumhouse. So, but then there's a lot of terrible stuff too, like Truth or Dare. I think that was a Blumhouse one, and I haven't seen it, but from what I hear, it's pretty bad. So anyway, that's their model, and yeah, Upgrade is a Blumhouse production. So my wife, she was away on business for the majority of that week last week, and so I usually have a difficult time watching movies when she's gone. It's just mostly because, you know, after dealing with the kids, you know, getting them fed, getting them into bed or bath or whatever, usually means that I can't start a movie until maybe 8:30 or 9. And I have a self-imposed bedtime of like 10:30 the latest during the week. And so that makes it pretty tough to me to, you know, for me to get the kids all put away, put to bed, and then watch a movie. But anyway, that Wednesday night, I decided, you know what, I'm going to make an exception and just plan to actually watch the movie, but watch a movie. And my plan was to actually watch Tag, which I noticed was just available to rent on iTunes. So I was just kind of feeling for something, you know, silly or stupid or whatever. So then I pulled up the movies on my Apple TV in my theater, and I noticed that Upgrade was actually in there. And I wasn't actually going to go to it. I actually thought it was only available for digital buy at this point. But I decided, you know, I'm going to go check. And I scrolled over to it and pulled it up, and it was actually available for rent. So I called an Audible and decided, you know what, I'm going to watch Upgrade instead, because I'd heard a few good things about it, and I thought I'd check it out. I was pretty curious about it. So kind of on a side note here, I noticed recently, actually, that the renting of the HD version of movies in iTunes is now $6.99 Canadian, up from $5.99. So, you know, that's getting up there in rental prices, because a lot of these movies you can buy on iTunes for like $10. So $6.99 to rent a movie it's getting up there. And I don't think it's all the movies. It might be just kind of the newest releases that are now $6.99. But I did notice that recently, and that's, you know, I don't rent a lot of them. I actually buy more than I rent, which might make my wife crazy. But yeah, $6.99, yeah, it's getting up there in rental price. So anyway, I knew very little of Upgrade. I did barely knew anything about this movie. So I do remember briefly hearing about it when it hit theaters a few months ago. And that was, you know, that was only because there was a little bit of buzz around it. People were saying it was actually a pretty decent movie, or that's kind of the impression I was getting from a little bit of things I heard of it. But, you know, after kind of it made its initial run there in theaters, I just mostly stopped paying attention to it and didn't really hear much of it again. So from the title, you know, and the little bit of news I heard about it, I figured it was about a guy who was going to be upgrading his body with technology. And I guess that description is kind of true, but it's not quite true, actually, after watching the movie. So instead, Logan Marshall Green's character, so he's implanted with this new AI chip, which ends up having some dire consequences, as you could imagine. So overall, I found this movie pretty entertaining. But even though it didn't end like I thought it would, it actually had, you know, ended in a completely different way than I thought it was going to. It did feel a bit underwhelming to me. I don't think it was bad by any means, but it just didn't keep me fully engaged. Like, there were a few times where I actually felt bored watching the movie, and I just kind of wanted it to pick up the pace and kind of get going. So, I mean, that being said, it did start off a bit slow as well. It takes, you know, surprisingly more time for Gray Trace, so that's the main character played by Logan Marshall Green, to actually get upgraded. So they do spend a bit of time early on trying to establish this relationship between Gray and his wife Ash, who's played by Melanie Vallejo, and it's fine, like, you know, as they're building this relationship up. But I thought it felt a bit like they were, you know, just kind of going through the motions to show us that even though they were different types of people, like Logan Marshall Green's character Gray, he was all about no tech. Like, he was, in that time, people have implants, these tech implants. He doesn't have any of those. He doesn't use any of their new cars that are self-driving. He's like, his job is to fix up old cars. I think he's fixing up a Firebird. And his wife, she is all about tech. She works for a tech company, and she uses these cars that drive her around. She's like totally invested in all that. So there's this, you know, difference between the wife and the husband. It's pretty apparent, and they make it pretty apparent in that early part of the movie. And, you know, despite this, they show us that, you know, that they're madly in love. You know, just that whole kind of way they were trying to build up that relationship, it just didn't feel organic to me. Kind of just felt like they were just checking the boxes just to say, yeah, this is what we got to show them to show, you know, this is what we got to do to show the audience that these people are in love. So yeah, it just didn't, it's not that I didn't buy it, but it just felt, it didn't feel real to me. So yeah, even though this is set in the future, this is a film that explores themes that we're starting to deal with today. And that's probably what I found most interesting. So those themes really are things that humans, you know, they've struggled with throughout history. And that is how, you know, how we adapt to new technology, how we become reliant on it, and how it, you know, has implications culturally and socially, such as, you know, certain jobs becoming obsolete. So we see that in this movie, and, you know, it's something that it does explore a little bit. You know, just for perspective, I guess, of today's world, we can see how people have become reliant on mobile phones And I really liked this part of the film, and I thought that it did a solid job, you know, projecting kind of the near future. You know, there's nothing really new here in terms of technology. Like, most of the stuff is things that we have today. The stuff we see here is stuff we have today, but it's just basically extended out to become more advanced or more abundant in its use. It's just more ubiquitous, I guess, in this movie. And, you know, the stuff around law enforcement that we see in the movie and how it uses technology, such as drones and facial or chip recognition, seems like something that we'll definitely see in our lifetimes. And there's a scene in here when his wife and him are talking, and she says, you know, she gets home from work and she says, hey, do you want to print a pizza? And then he says, yeah, how about we make a pizza instead? And so, you know, that, like, I mean, we don't print food yet or anything like that, but I could see that as being something that we do, you know, have pretty soon here, or not maybe soon, but I see it as something that we could definitely have in the near future. So everything here, you know, including the various implants that we see people have, you know, they don't seem to be outside the realm of possibility. It seems like things that, you know, we're going to have fairly soon. So I think probably the most interesting aspect of the film is just the exploration of artificial intelligence and how that will start to impact our lives and how that's going to come with serious implications. So these are already questions that are being discussed now as advancements in AI are being made every day. And this is where I wish they would have, you know, focused more on in the movie. So just exploring these themes and getting deeper into that subject. So they do explore it a bit, but I think it was, you know, a bit too much emphasis was put on these action scenes. And I just would have preferred, you know, if they would have spent more time exploring, you know, the themes around AI and how that's going to affect our lives and how, you know, it's basically going to change everything. So, like I said, they do focus on some action scenes here, and the action's okay. It's a little bit odd, like when we get into these scenes where Logan Marshall Green's character, Gray, he gives his body over to the AI whenever he wants. It's basically his decision to say, okay, AI, take over and do your thing. So when he tells his AI to, you know, take over and fight for him, it looks a bit goofy, like the way it's not like cool fighting where you see, you know, awesome choreographed, like martial arts or anything like that. It's kind of really choppy, like maybe a computer would do it, right? Like the computer is basically calculating exactly what it needs to do to defeat an opponent. So everything is really calculated and just looks like it's, you know, basically playing out a script. So that was kind of cool, but to think of it like that, because that's probably how a computer would do it, right? Like it's not going to be doing some rad karate or anything like that. It's just going to be doing exactly what it needs in order to defeat the opponent. And so that was pretty cool to see. But like I said, it looked odd, and it took a little bit getting used to, but it was definitely something I have not seen before. I don't think I've ever seen, you know, a fight choreographed in the way it is in this movie. So that was something new, I guess. So I was a fan of how the movie ended. I thought it had a pretty decent twist at the end that I found to be fairly satisfying. You know, it wasn't an out-of-this-world kind of blow-your-mind kind of twist, but it did feel realistic to the story, and it pulled everything together, and I was pretty happy with it. So Upgrade, I would definitely, you know, recommend checking it out. It looks really good, has a great score, and, you know, explores some pretty interesting themes that are becoming, you know, more and more relevant every day in our real lives. So it's currently available on Blu-ray, and it's available on all of the streaming VOD services for you as well. My rating for Upgrade is 3 out of 5. Wake up, Daddy, wake up!
Hey, Dad.
Hey, sweetheart, where are you?
Study group, gonna go all night.
Oh, one more thing, I wanna know about the final you took today.
I'm Margot. I'm 15. Student.
911, what's your emergency?
I'm calling to report a missing person.
Okay, who is this regarding?
My daughter.
I'm the detective assigned to your daughter's case. I need to know how everything unfolded.
Understood.
I think we're gonna go late, like, all night.
One, after a study session, Margot didn't return home.
Margot Kim. School has her marked as absent today.
Two. She didn't attend school on Friday.
My daughter is in a lesson with you right now.
Margot canceled her classes 6 months ago.
And three. She's been transferring funds for the last 6 months. We'll handle the ground investigation. But as a parent, you can help us with who your daughter talks to. Is that something you can do?
Yes. Do you mind answering some questions for me to help?
Did see her eat lunch alone.
On Thursday?
Every day.
You don't think she's involved with anything serious?
I know my daughter.
We're not really that close.
She has friends, right?
Kind of.
Why did you invite her to study group?
I'm trying to get into Berkeley next year.
When was the last time you saw her? She did not run away.
Local teen has been missing since last Thursday.
She made a transaction of $2,500.
I know my daughter. Where were you the night my daughter went missing? I know my daughter.
Look into her behavior also.
She gets a fake ID. I know my daughter.
This is her keychain.
She was my best friend.
You broke his jaw.
I know my daughter.
I'm trying to help you find my daughter.
I didn't know her. I didn't know my daughter.
That was a clip from 2018, Searching, directed by Anish Chaganti, written by Anish Chaganti and Sev Ohanian, starring John Cho, Deborah Messing, and Joseph Lee. The description is, after a 16-year-old daughter goes missing, a desperate father breaks into her laptop to look for clues to find her. So I watched this one at the Scotiabank Theatre in Saskatoon with my wife. So this film wasn't really on my radar, and that wasn't because I didn't think it sounded interesting, but it was just something that I didn't really hear about and wasn't really paying too much attention to. So I did hear a few things here and there about how it's a movie that takes place completely on a computer screen, and I found that to be interesting to see how that plays out, because I haven't seen Unfriended yet, which also takes place, I believe, completely on a computer screen. So it's on my list to see that, because I've heard good things about Unfriended, but I just haven't got around to watching it. So it's Searching. Yeah, it's a movie, like I said, that takes place completely on a movie screen, and it was kind of just kind of sitting in that same place as Unfriended for me. A film that I was interested in seeing, but I just wasn't high on my list, so I didn't make it a priority to check out. It would just be something, you know, that I would eventually get to. And then I started to hear some of these critics' early reviews, I guess. Some critics were getting a chance to see the movie, and some early reviews were coming out, and it was getting pretty high praises, and that perked my interest a little bit. And then there was this interview that I listened to with the director Anish Chaganti on the Slash Film Daily podcast. And that actually amped up my interest in it quite a bit. So right then, right after I finished that, listening to that interview, I decided to go buy some tickets for my wife and I on opening night. It opened the Friday officially, I guess. And that's when we went, was on the Friday, even though there was Thursday night screenings as well. So there's a current special on with Cineplex movies or Cineplex theaters in Canada, at least. I don't know where else, but so you can use your scene points. So every time you go see a movie there, you get scene points. I think you get however many points for every movie you buy. And after 1,000 points, you get to see a movie for free using your scene points, using 1,000 points. So I think I have somewhere around 4,000 points right now. I never redeem my scene points for some reason. And right now they have a promotion on where you can see a movie for, you know, half the scene points. So instead of 1,000 points for a movie, it costs 500. So that's a pretty good deal. And I think that runs up till September 6th, the end of this week, or until Thursday, I guess that is. Yeah, so for Searching, I was able to buy my wife's ticket and my ticket using scene points. So basically 2-for-1, it cost me 1,000 points to see that movie. And so, yeah, I'm going to try and go see, I mean, I only got to all 6, a few more days. I'm going to maybe try and see at least one more movie with that deal, because that's a pretty good deal. I mean, back to Searching. My overall impression of Searching is that it's a pretty great film. It does something unique, you know, with having the whole film playing out on a computer screen. And, you know, even though that may sound gimmicky, it actually doesn't come off as gimmicky at all when you're actually watching it. You know, even if you're not a fan of found footage films, this one just feels different. And yeah, it's not technically a found footage film since you're actually watching things as they happen and not, you know, later people haven't found the film and pieced it together. So you're watching things that have happened. This is actually happening as you're watching it. And you know, despite that, it just still does have that feeling of being a found footage type movie. Like, it just doesn't have that cinematic feel that you get with a traditional film. But I think, you know, despite that, like I said, if you're not a fan, I think it's different enough that I think you should still give it a chance. So the opening scene in this is pretty awesome. And it's just kind of this montage of the main character, well, I guess the daughter of the main character, John Cho. So Margot, it's just kind of a montage of her early life. And it just focuses on key moments from her childhood. And yeah, that 5-minute scene right there, it just kind of grabs you, and that gets you for the rest of the film. Like, you're in after watching that first five minutes. It's really well done. And it just, I think it's a key, you know, I think if that opening scene didn't work, I think maybe the rest of the movie is not going to work for you. But it totally worked for me. It got me completely invested in the characters, and I was all in at that point. So I think the standout piece of this movie for me is the acting. John Cho is super good in this, and I think that's really saying something, because most of the film is just him reacting to things, like watching video clips of his daughter, having video calls with other people, like his brother or the detective who's in on his daughter's case, and, you know, his daughter's friends. And he manages to somehow take a hold of your emotions and keep you invested the entire run of the movie. And so, you know, like, you're watching him. So, like, it's all on a computer screen. So lots of these times you're watching him reacting because he has his FaceTime window open on his Mac. So he's watching some video play out on YouTube or whatever, or on Facebook, and you're seeing the cameras on him from his MacBook. And you get to see him reacting and that type of stuff. So it's pretty clever how they did it. And, you know, John Cho, yeah, he totally pulls it off. And his daughter, Margot, played by Michelle Law, she's really good as well. So yeah, I found myself really caring for her character. And yeah, she was pretty effective just in portraying a girl struggling, you know, with some problems. So this film has a really good mystery to it. I mean, it is a mystery movie. And, you know, it constantly keeps you guessing as to where the story and the mystery is going to take you. And I never found myself bored. Like, the pacing's really good. It runs for like an hour and 42 minutes. And the story just keeps unraveling in an interesting way, keeping you on the edge of your seat the whole time. So I will say, however, that I figured out exactly how the story was going to end about 2/3 into the film. And about 30 minutes into the film, I had a pretty good idea where it was going to go. There was just this scene in that first 30 minutes, kind of a quick scene, quick shot that looked a little bit, kind of tipped me off that this, you know, what I was seeing was going to maybe play out later on in the movie. Something just looked a little bit off to me in this shot we get. So I kind of put that in the back of my mind, and, you know, that first 30 minutes, and I wasn't, you know, if it didn't go, you know, if it didn't play out as I maybe thought it was going to play out, I wouldn't have been surprised, because it was pretty early on. It was kind of a random thing to think for me, I thought, in that first 30 minutes. But then, yeah, by the 2/3 mark, there's this key scene that totally gave away to me on how it was going to end. And like I said, it ended exactly like I figured it was going to. Like, I mean, exactly. So I figured it out, you know, exactly as it ended, about 2/3 of the way through. So that was disappointing for me. I really wish I hadn't figured it out, because it, you know, would have obviously been more satisfying if I hadn't. But sometimes, yeah, more rarely these days. I used to figure things out quite a lot in movies, but it doesn't happen as much anymore. So something, you know, something small can just tip me off. And like I said, there was that one quick scene 30 minutes in that just felt a little bit off to me, and it ended up coming to fruition. You know, despite me figuring out the mystery really early on, I still really love this movie. It was still really enjoyed it. And, you know, beyond the great mystery and the top-notch acting, this movie is also, you know, it's a pretty good commentary on just the dangers of the internet, mostly around social media and online personas. But, you know, despite that, it also does something we usually don't see in films about the internet. And that is, you know, commenting on that the internet is actually pretty cool, and it's a great tool that can be used for great things. And I thought that was something refreshing to see in a film today. And yeah, the internet can be something other than evil, you know, it can be something other than an evil force that will destroy your life. It was also cool to see there's a lot of nostalgia just around some of the old operating system stuff, like Windows XP, you know, seeing the classic startup screen and hearing that, you know, that startup music when you log into the Windows XP. That was kind of cool to see. Forgotten about that. So yeah, Searching, it just opened in theaters in wide release this past weekend. And yeah, I really recommend checking it out. It was really great. It's really good. It's great to see another film headed up by Asians and directed by a South Asian, having a strong showing at the box office. So I think Crazy Rich Asians is actually holding number one spot for the third week in a row since its release. So I think it made $22 million this past weekend. Searching opened up here number four with $6 million. So not a huge opening, but it wasn't enough to get them number four. But the difference is that Searching was only playing in 1,200 screens, while Crazy Rich Asians was playing at nearly 4,000. So that's a pretty big difference there, and could make up for, or could explain, you know, some of the discrepancy in the weekend take. So yeah, this movie, Searching, great mystery film. Highlights are some great acting, lots of heart, and will tug at your heartstrings for sure. My rating for Searching is 4.5 out of 5. So that's all I have for this week. Next week, I hope to talk about a couple movies. So I'm hoping to see BlacKkKlansman, which is still playing in theaters right now. So I'm going to maybe try and use one more half price Scene Points ticket here for me this week. So I'll try and go check that out. Heard lots of good things about BlacKkKlansman, and it is something I'd like to see in the theater. And then Hereditary just came out on Blu-ray this week, came out on Tuesday, and I just picked that up today, actually, so I'm looking forward to watching that. This was a movie I had hoped to see in the theater, and I actually ended up deciding against going to see it in the theater just because I wasn't sure. I was a little bit weary about how the audience was going to be. I heard a lot of people saying that the audience can make or break this movie for you. If you have a good audience, then you know, you can really enjoy this film, but if you get an audience that's not into it, they can really wreck this film for you, even if you were going to be into it. So I just decided, you know, I'm going to wait for this to be out on Blu-ray and just watch it in my theater and not risk having an audience that's going to wreck it for me. So hopefully it lives up to my expectations, because I have some pretty high expectations for Hereditary. I heard a lot of good things about it, so I'm really looking forward to checking that out this week as well. So you can always find more episodes of this podcast at red7cast.com. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. And if you wanted to help me out, you could head over to iTunes, search for this podcast, Red 7 MovieCast, and when it comes up, give me a rating and or a review. That could possibly help me get this podcast out in front of a few more people. If you have an Amazon Echo, you can just say, "Alexa, play me the Red 7 MovieCast podcast," and it should fire up the most recent episode for you. If you've enjoyed this episode or know someone who may enjoy it, feel free to share this with them. You can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at HJNaidu. And until next time, just keep watching movies. Thanks for listening. Bye.